Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Go Wild is a free social community created for and by hunters. Go Wild has recently partnered with Mountain Tough for a free 30-day workout program designed to get you in shape for turkey season called the Go Wild Challenge. Download Go Wild to sign up and let everyone know in a Go Wild post that you're joining us. Then, each time you do a workout, tag Go Wild and Mountain Tough to hold yourself accountable. Also, Go Wild will be attending the Great American Outdoor Show February 4th through the 12th. If you're in the area, stop by booth 412, meet the guys, and learn all about Go Wild. Visit downloadgowild.com and sign up today. HuntStand is the most popular and functional mobile hunting app on the market. With a variety of base maps to choose from, satellite imagery that is updated every month, the ability to check the weather, know property information, and even catalog your trail cam pics, HuntStand even gives you the ability to import pins and location markers from other mobile apps. Visit HuntStand.com or download wherever you download your apps. Enter discount code SN20 at checkout for 20% off.
Welcome to the How to Hunt Turkeys podcast. I'm Paul Campbell. Join me as we dive into the world of turkey hunting. Every episode, we'll explore the minds of the finest turkey hunters around. We'll take a look at the people, the places, the tactics, gear, and the culture that creates the mystique around America's favorite bird. That's right. I said it. America's favorite bird, the wild turkey. Throw on your turkey vest, grab your box call. Let's talk some turkey. How to Hunt Turkeys podcast is brought to you by Go Wild. Visit timetogowild.com or download the app on iOS or Android. Go Wild has all the gear the wild turkey hunter needs. Camo clothes, hats, vests, turkey calls, decoys, and everything else. Sign up for a free account today and get $10 off your first order. timetogowild.com. Wicked North Gear, delivering the very best gear for a life well lived in the great outdoors. From field kits and DIY taxidermy solutions to hats, hoodies, stickers, and
which
more.
I don't know if that's how you are on some level. You know, I talk about it every day at least. I don't know if it's like that for everyone, but I think for new hunters, man, I feel like understanding the culture and kind of the reason that the turkey hunters hunt. And I was talking to Hunter Farrier. And it's hard to explain that to people that aren't turkey hunters. Like, why do you turkey hunt? I think Colonel Kelly said it best. Well, because I have to. That's it. That's the only good answer. Yeah, I can.
Absolutely.
That's the only good reason, because I have to. I can't not imagine a spring where I'm not turkey hunting. I mean, I would be on death's doorstep, you know, and I'm going to crawl out there is one last time and hopefully die in the turkey woods, I guess. But so what's that like for you, man? What's that culture like for you?
Yeah, there's something religious about turkey hunting, for sure. I mean, there's something that's It's unavoidable. It's if it's springtime, then you know where you can find me. And that's not ever changed. It's not ever going to change, most likely. It's not like that with anything else. Like you said, I don't know why. I can't put my finger on it. I don't know if it's the dialogue, the interaction, the communication. There's just a little bit more of a, like an intimate feel when it comes to hunting them. I can't put my finger on it. I don't have a word that's going to describe it. And I don't think anybody does. And that's why literature, is a little heavier in the turkey hunting circles. Because everybody's trying to put their finger on what it is about turkey hunting that makes it different, that makes it special, that makes it, like I said, almost a religion. And nobody can, and everybody keeps trying. We all are, trying to, create this web of words that's going to kind of make somebody feel what we feel when it comes to spring turkey hunting. And while there's some guys that do it better than others, that I don't think anybody's been able to accurately describe that emotion that it brings to you. So as far as an answer as to why is turkey hunting different, I don't have like a concrete answer. I'm not sure anybody does. But yeah, there's definitely a different air around turkey hunting when compared to everything else.
You know, I would agree with that. You can't answer it. And you know, anyone can just answer the question, but it's not the full reason behind it. And I know for me, the first time I heard a wild turkey gobble on my second or third hunt, something just changed in me completely. And I can't explain what it was because I don't really know. But man, it's been something that drives me, in the spring to just madness. And I'm here for it. And I hope if I could do it for a million years, man, I would. So.
Yeah, sure thing. Sure thing. And the more, from what I've learned just through experience, the more, I don't know the word here either, but it's something to do with, the more connected, like the least amount of, if you don't dilute the process, I guess is what I'm saying. Like if you keep it between you and the bird as much as possible, I feel like that connection, that direct line of, that interaction just seems more pure. And it's just like every time that you are able to have that experience, I don't know, it's just more meaningful. It's more consuming almost. And that's just kind of like you do this and unfortunately the animal, the bird has to die, for the definition of success, and every time he does, you almost like, man, that was such a religious ordeal. How can I get more out of it? If he's got to die, how can I get more out of it? And I think that's what we're all doing, at least most of us, many of us, are just trying to figure out every time that we were afforded the opportunity to play ball with one of them, how do we get more out of that experience? Because once he's gone, he's not coming back. And then, of course, we're all very motivated right now to make sure we got plenty more of them. And with the conservation talk and the situations with the population. So I think everybody's just kind of consumed by the wild turkey. We want to get more out of each experience and we want to make sure that there's plenty of experiences in the future. So pretty cool thing, pretty cool time to be involved with wild turkey in any facet.
Yeah, it really is. And just for you and I, point that I want to make about kind of the cultural nuances between deer hunting, the most popular form of hunting in the country, and turkey hunting. And Brent Rogers mentioned this the other day, and deer hunting is so focused on the trophy, and it's the antler size and how many antler points and all of these things. And that's been the focus for people. I know for me, man, some of the best hunts that I've had, just a hard goblin turkey, man, back and forth. And you're in the game, you're in the battle, and he comes out and he's got, you know, a 6-inch beard or whatever it is, you know, if that's the measurement that you want to throw out, it doesn't matter to me, you know. And it's the challenge, it's the back and forth, it's the goblin, it's the strut and the drum and all these things that, you know, we'll talk about. But it's the trophy aspect for me is not a part of my turkey hunting. And I think I'm happier for that. And I know some people that's important to them. I could care less, man.
Yeah. And I think like when we started the Pinhoti project, that was our motto. That was, I think it's still on our website, or I know it was, it may be on our YouTube channel. I can't remember. But it was essentially, and I'm going to butcher this, but because I can't remember it verbatim, but it's more or less focusing on the journey that it takes to get there rather than the prize, rather than the trophy.
Yeah.
Because hunting, like you said, I think people get more consumed with the journey, and the people who get consumed with the journey, they're just going to be better at it. They're just going to enjoy it more. They're just going to get more out of it. It's not the end goal. It's not the end result. It's not the pile of feathers or cold meat, which is all you're left with. It's the journey that it takes to get there. And that was kind of the motto that we set with the videos that we were going to start putting out there, because we knew that the footage wasn't going to be stellar. We knew that we were turkey hunters with a video camera. We weren't videographers, and we still aren't. I hope it's gotten a little better just through trial and error, but I didn't want to be a videographer. You know, I didn't want to. That's not the feel that I wanted to give the viewers. I wanted to put the viewers there, but and we're just turkey hunters, and I wanted to be just like them because I am, and so I wanted that feeling, and I wanted that content to show the journey and to show the strategies and the. And just that emotion and that connection that you have from the whole process, from showing up all the way to the finish. And if it winds up with a dead turkey, fine. But that's not what I wanted it to be centered around. I didn't want there to be people let down if there wasn't a kill shot captured, because there might not be. Here again, we're turkey hunters with video cameras, you know, so... you know, that was one of the main kind of mottos that we centered the Pinhoti project around and the content around that. There was kind of two. It was that one and the idea that, you know, this, what we did, our success was defined by effort, not by, you know, basically anybody could do it is what we wanted to say, you know, success defined by effort, not by fortune. So, you know, sure, you can pay your way to a lot of these, a lot of the successes that we've had, a lot of the goals that we've reached. But effort is makes it possible. So that was kind of the two things that the Pinhoti project was grounded in.
That's a good quote. I want to say it again. Success defined by effort, not by fortune. I mean, that's really the heart and soul, I think, of what it means to be a turkey hunter and why we do it, you know. And for sure, there's a billion things that branch off of that, but that's a really good one. And, you know, years ago, I got to the point where it's, you know what, man, I came home empty handed, and that's okay. I had a freaking great time in the woods, man. I pushed myself. I saw places in my own state that I've never seen before. That I might be the first human that's walked in there in 80 years. And that's cool. You heard some turkeys, and there's so much to it. And I, man, that's a good quote. I like that. Did you come up with that
Yeah, I think so. and that's part of I don't even know what I did with my phone, but, we have it on, I think it's on the website. But yeah, it's just, I do a lot of thinking. I think anybody that follows the Pinhoti Project knows that, especially with the cigar talk and especially when I'm by myself or the long hours on the road. And it's kind of a known thing that I spend a lot of hours on the road and I don't listen to music very often. It's just, I don't listen to music. I think I listen to the tires roll and I think, and I'm consumed by wild turkeys to the point where that's all I'm thinking about. I'm thinking, you know, just, frankly, it used to be how I could get in front of another one. But now, since I've done kind of transitioned into this capturing the whole experience and sharing it with people, a lot of times my mind is now rolling around with how can I illustrate the emotions and the everything that goes into turkeys so that if somebody's watching this that has never experienced it before, how could they get it, you know, get it, so to speak? Like, how can they feel what I'm feeling and love it as much as I do? Because I know if we have an army of individuals that love wild turkeys and hunting them and just in general, the way I do, the way you do, we're never going to have to worry about being without them. And that's a lot of times what's rolling around in my head now while I'm on the road. How can I capture this process to show the admiration that we as turkey hunters have for wild turkeys and not seem crazy, not seem delusional, and people just think this guy's a go-path of some sort, you know?
So one of the things that I've noticed over the last couple of years, and I've been watching videos on Penhody Project of you for some years. And I've noticed that you're on the camera more, filming other people more than you have in years past. Is that part of the transition?
Well, it's just a part of that. No matter what you say, and no matter how the viewers say or how somebody else says, you know, people want to see turkeys and they want to see the process, and they're only going to watch the back of your head for so long. And when I've got the camera in my hand, the footage quality goes up considerably. It's really hard to self film. And even when you do capture a self film hunt successfully, it's really hard to get, you know, the subject zoomed in, focused properly. And that's what people really want to see. We started at the top, like I said earlier, saying that that's not going to be what this is centered around. And still to this day, capturing the kill shot is maybe a little bit more important to me, but it's not necessary. I'm cutting footage right now to where it just didn't happen, you know, and it just the way it happens sometimes. But when I've got the video camera in my hands rather than on a tripod beside me and I'm capturing somebody else, the footage quality goes up. So I do try to make sure that there's a portion of that. But that being said, I can't do it for too long because then I start getting messages like, I'm tired of the group hunts. When are you just going to go hunting by yourself? But on the other hand, you know, when I do too much hunting by myself, I get the comments, be nice to see a kill shot, you know, be nice to see some pottery, you know. So, I mean, you got to do a little bit of everything to make folks happy, I guess. But I do enjoy hunting with a small handful of folks. So we do usually share some spring, you know, mornings. And a lot of times I'm focused on trying to get some at least decent footage at that point in time.
I think, you know, kind of looking back to some of the years past, when you've had, you know, the moment of truth comes and, you know, you'll whisper into the camera, I'm not going to get this on camera. Sorry about that. And yeah, you know, you'll shoot this turkey and the camera's like on a log or on a field or a tree or something, you know, and I always appreciate that because I know what it's like to be there where it's like, I'm not moving my hand to turn that damn camera. I don't care about it. You can hear it happen. I'll tell you about it. I'm not moving. So as a turkey hunter, I appreciate that. These other people that are sending those messages, stop it. So stop, just relax. Yeah, there's just a tiny little delay. So it's just like, you know, when you're a kid, you're talking on a walkie-talkie, you say over and then you wait. And then, you know, that's what I'm doing. I'm waiting for a split second after you finish. So
yeah,
gotta love the internet, man. One of my, you know, for the people, you know, listening to this that might not have seen many Penhody Project seasons, I've watched a couple of, you know, all the way through. And one of the things that makes me laugh, and I don't know what to call it other than your descent into madness throughout the spring. And it's, you know, your eyes start sinking in, you look tired, you look hungry, and you're just burning it at both ends. So that's gotta be a good feeling when you get done, you do it all over again. But I always laugh at those, man. When I see it, just you're spry and rosy cheeked in the spring in Florida. And then you get to like Vermont and you're just like, oh God.
Yeah. It is definitely a long drawn out grind and wouldn't trade a minute of it. And everybody's like, man, you've got to be ready for it to end. And I will never be ready to let go of a spring. My body may be, but my mind is always sharp and ready to, you know, take on a new morning, new day. But yeah, it is funny watching that process. And usually this time of year, I'm starting to get into those end of the season hunts. And I'm looking at that camera, and I look at that camera every flipping morning, like I promised I would in 2018. And I can look at my face and I see the sunken in black holes below my eyes. And I look thin, and Courtney's always like, you show up and you're skin and bones, and you know, you drag yourself back into the house with the, you know, by the skin of your teeth, it seems like every season. And I wouldn't have it any other way, but that's just, you know, that's just part of the process, and something you got to prepare for. I mean, people that, if you work a, you know, a normal 9-to-5 and you're used to 8 hours a day and you just flip a switch and you dive into that type of lifestyle, it's different. You really got to prepare yourself, your body, your mind. I mean, it's a dream for me, and it'd be a dream for many people, I'm sure. But it's definitely not all rainbows and unicorns, I promise.
Yeah, this was the first year for me that my turkey season started in March, and it ended, you know, the last couple of days of May. And by the end of it, man, I had, like, mentally I had nothing left, physically I had nothing left, but I would have done it for another 10 weeks if I could. And you just, you know, you hate to see it. You hate to see it end, but you know, it has to. And you know, I was Googling, like, you know, turkey hunting in, you know, Vermont, and just see how many, you know, okay, how far is it? You know, I got 5 more days up there. I could probably get up there. My wife's like, just stop, man. just take a breather. So, but no, that's yeah. Good. I'll tell you what, man, I've really enjoyed kind of the front half of this, you know, just about, you know, like the heart and soul of a turkey hunter. And you know, I wanted to talk strategy with you, you know, on the turkey hunting side of it, not just like the emotional side of turkey hunting. And I feel like that would almost be a disservice to this talk, but we're going to do it a little bit, just a little bit. And then, you know, cause that's what people were here for. So the one strategy that I want to talk about, and I'm going to show this to you. I had a list. I don't know if you see this. That's all the like strategy topics that I wanted to talk about. We're going to throw that away. The one thing that eludes me as a turkey hunter, and I think it's just part of the game, but it's when you're locked in that battle, man. And for me, it's just like, it's just trying to, there's the woodsmanship aspect of it. It's where that Tom is just, you know, he's not ready. He's not quite ready. And I've heard you say it before, like, I'm looking for the turkey that wants to die. And it's, for me, it's like figuring out which turkey wants to die. And it's just kind of that, like that moment in the woods where you're like, okay, do I move now? Do I stay here? You know, what do I do? So it's that moment where you're dealing with that really hard to kill turkey, which they're all hard to kill. So like, what do you do, man, for like, when you're trying to figure out, like, am I in the right spot? And I mean that literally, like, am I in the right spot? Is this the right turkey?
So we're asking about how we can tell when we kind of interact with the turkey, whether he's the one that we need to spend time with, or
yes.
a lot of different factors going to come into place there. We'll throw a few examples out there, like Florida. If I find a turkey in Florida, I'm after him. End of story. Because the populations are typically pretty thin out there. So we're going to treat that turkey like, I don't know, like a, he's fragile, basically, because we don't want to bump him, because he may get somewhere where we can't find him again. We may kind of gear down. We're not quite as aggressive. If I'm in somewhere, like I'm in Iowa, or if I'm in Missouri or even North Alabama or South Alabama or Georgia, somewhere where I think the turkey populations are a bit more dense, then I may be a little bit more aggressive. And if I push in on a turkey and, you know, I can tell he's got hens, he's not gobbling, he's not being very responsive, he's only shot gobbling once every 20 or 30 minutes. If I feel like the turkey population, the densities are there for me to go on down the road and find a turkey that's going to be more cooperative, then that's what I'm going to do. So it's kind of a situational. It's all depending on how many turkeys you're around and the likelihood of finding another one. Most of the time we are, we have the luxury of hunting areas kind of throughout the country that have pretty adequate turkey populations. You know, they're, like I said, I mentioned Florida, not that Florida's having some population, you know, issue, I don't believe. It's just that that's just the nature of Osceola turkeys, is they're pretty thin. The terrain that they live in is thick, so that you got to be on top of them to hear them. And that's probably got more to do with it than there being fewer turkeys. It's just as harder to flat out harder to find them. So when I do find one, I'm going to devote more time to that one turkey, even if he's acting ornery per se, because I think it's going to require quite a bit of time to find another one. And that has a lot to do with it. But just kind of going back to more, maybe a more generic situation, which I think is what you were referring to. Say if I'm in Missouri and I hear a turkey off the roost, I move in and I set up on this turkey. He's gobbling really good off the roost. And then the closer I get, the more I understand why, because I can hear some little hen talk around him. And I figure out he's being provoked by hens. He flies down. He's not very responsive to calling. Basically, I'm painting this picture in my mind without actually having to see the picture. And that picture is the turkey roosted right with hens. He flew down right with hens. And he's going to follow those hens around all day. I could devote the day or perhaps several days to figuring out where the hens are going, what they're feeding on, get in front of them, because no turkey is impossible to kill. But I may look at what I have in front of me and go, okay, it may take me 2 days to figure this turkey out because he's not going to give me enough, you know, he's not going to gobble enough for me to keep tabs on him. It's going to be more of a looking for sign and following them game. Or I could pick up shop. I could hit this long, narrow ridge here. And by the time I cover another mile, I most likely am going to find a 2-year-old turkey or a turkey that doesn't have hens with him, and he's going to be more cooperative and he's going to play the game like I would rather play it. And that's what I'm going to do in that situation. Trying to figure out when to pick up and move shop and when to kind of stay. That's such an experience thing. It's just kind of a feeling that you get, maybe call it a gut feeling, but it's just so many factors that come into play there. And I think experience is going to be that. And that's you know, that's going to be a redundant statement. I mean, experience, there's no substitute for it. You can't buy it. There's only one way to get it. And that's the answer for so many of these tactics and strategies and how to know when to do what. We can all lay down some baselines, and we can lay down some tendencies that turkeys have or what we've found through our experience. But until you get out there and you kind of live through it, then you can't build that experience bank to make the decisions that you'll need to make. But other than that, as far as knowing when to, you hear me say it in these videos a lot, you got to know when to hold them and when to fold them, you know. And trying to think off the top of my head any other times that I would think to leave a turkey. And a lot of times it may have quite a bit to do with what time of year it is. I think it's a pretty known, you know, fact that early season is pretty tough, especially in the states that open earlier, you know, in Alabama, Mississippi. It's a reoccurring theme that when you deal with these early season turkeys in, say, Mississippi, they can be pretty doggone tough early in the season because they're still flocked up. You're still dealing with usually a couple gobblers together. They still got a pile of hens. Pretty lethargic as soon as they hit the ground in the mornings often. So you do a lot of trolling, just trying to find that one turkey that's been kicked out, or that one turkey that's kind of been pushed away from the flock, or a lot of times that early season stuff's just got a lot to do with luck. The more time you spend in the woods, you wind up in front of a small flock of turkeys and you're able to be in the right place at the right time. So those early season situations, I do expect to find more turkeys that I need to leave, and more turkeys that I just need to drop a pin and remember where they're at. And if I have the luxury of coming back in, you know, a week, 10 days, then I will, to see how many of those hens that he had is moved off. So probably a long-winded question, but that question has so many different avenues to address as to knowing when and when you want to leave one and when you want to stay with one.
Yeah, that's the hard part with doing a podcast that's, you know, how to hunt turkeys, because with deer hunting or elk or, you know, waterfowl, there's all of these environmental factors that predicate the movements of these animals almost like religiously, right? I mean, we can look at a map and say, okay, you know, with all the slope angles and the wind and you know, transition zones, and say, okay, there's a high chance that they're going to be deer here all the time. And they're very you know, regimented in their movements. And then with turkeys, it's like you know, you look at like an amoeba under a microscope, and there's all these little things going over. I feel like that's how turkeys are. They're always, you know, where are they at? Everywhere. They could be anywhere, literally anywhere. I mean, obviously there's areas that they're going to prefer, but so that's such a hard question to answer. And I like hearing everyone has a different answer to that, but it's always the same. You know, I don't know. That's kind of the answer, right? I don't know. But I love that. I love your response to that question, because there is so much nuance to turkey hunting. It's a frustrating amount of nuance to turkey hunting. And that's part
of the, you hit on another topic right then about weather. I mean, in conditions. If I know where a flock of turkeys is on a pretty day, I might not be able to determine where they're going to go. And, but say, you know, the situation that we just spoke about, we get in on a turkey, we hear him gobbling, he's got a flock of hens. And I say, you know, it may take me 2 or 3 days to scout and kind of follow them and read the sign and figure out where they're going to be to get in front of them. But if it's raining the next day and I know kind of where that flock of turkeys is, and then I know where there's a nice wide open roadbed or a hilltop field or something, I may say, you know what, with given the conditions of it being wet and me knowing the tendencies of turkeys of wanting to be able to use their eyesight more when they're wet, that field may be where they're going to be. So while I wouldn't have hunted that turkey on another pretty day, I wouldn't have hunted that flock of turkeys on another pretty day if I was given a lot of rain or heavy winds and I had to hunt with my eyes, then maybe I would go back and hunt that flock of turkeys, because that way I would have a hint, you know, I would be given a clue. So just another example of being situational.
Yeah, that's a great point. So let's talk about weather here real quick, because that's one thing that, I mean, frustrates every hunter on the face of the planet. You hear these old wives says, well, they don't gobble on an east wind, or yeah, they don't gobble when it's windy. And I've been out in the turkey woods where I'm walking out, you're driving out, I'm like, this is a turkey killing morning. I mean, I feel like the weather's perfect, the sunrise is beautiful, birds are chirping, and then it's just complete silence. And so the question is, well, why are they not gobbling? I don't know. That's the answer, right? So
yeah,
when you've got these like weird fronts that go through, and you know, here in Ohio, you know, one day in, you know, mid-April, it could be 75 and sunny and a light breeze and it's beautiful. And the next day it's 22 and it's spitting snow and it's a 13 mile an hour wind, and, you know, during turkey season. So how do you react to those just extreme changes in weather?
I think I've said it before. I always, there's a weakness to every day. If it's a pretty day, oftentimes it's the turkey's, desire to gobble. If it's a day I can hear really well, then I'm going to use that to my advantage, being able to use my ears and put myself in the game by listening to them gobble. If it's a day where I'm not going to be able to hear gobbling, if it's a windy day, then that's going to have me hunting with my eyes. It's going to have the turkeys relying on their eyes even more. And that's going to give me the ability to move a little bit more aggressively because of the woods are moving. So I'm going to know there's going to probably be a bit more crawling and sneaking and hunt like a coyote, so to speak, when it's on a heavy wind day, because I have all the motion in the woods to kind of help conceal my movements, conceal my noise. If it's a rainy day, I know the leaves are wet. I can do a lot of moving without making a lot of noise, without, you know, getting attention toward me. I know the turkeys are going to be in the field. So there's so many little bitty things that the weather is going to allow you to kind of capitalize on. Yeah, I mean, that's how I try to use whatever the weather is going to allow me to do. Now, nobody, at least me, if given my rathers, it's not going to be windy when I turkey hunt, because the way I prefer to turkey hunt is with my ears. I like the auditory element of turkey hunting is what makes my gears turn. I mean, that's what I live for. Unfortunately, I'm not going to switch it off if it is windy. I'm going to figure out a way to hunt them regardless of the weather conditions. But given my rathers, I'm going to want it to be a pretty day to where I can listen and hear and move toward a gobbling turkey. But you just kind of have to, roll with the punches. Are you wanting to kind of dive into each specific weather kind of pattern there? Is that what?
Yeah, we can. Yeah, that's a good topic to talk about, I guess. Because it's so, like, with spring in any state, it's so volatile, you know. Mm. So, you know, a lot of hunters, if it's pouring down rain, they're not even gonna think about going out. I will hunt in a downpour before I hunt 40-mile-an-hour winds. That's just me, and I don't know if that's the right move, but the rain doesn't scare me. The wind, I absolutely can't stand it. I just get angry the entire time I'm out there.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's frustrating. Now we'll hit on a couple. We'll just kind of hit the big weather patterns that we kind of experience. And that's first and foremost is bluebird days, bright skies, high pressures, low winds. Everybody's favorite. And in those days, like I said, I'm going to hunt with my ears. I'm going to try to get up high. I'm going to try to use my ability to hear turkeys a long way to kind of get me in the game. These are the days that I'm probably going to do a lot of moving at those high points of the landscape to try to, you know, put calls into areas that I think turkeys are living, try to find a turkey that wants to play the game. It's pretty cut and dry. I mean, that's the definition. That's what everybody thinks about when it comes to turkey hunting. It gets challenging, like you mentioned, in windy days. And there's two kind of ways to tackle wind. And first off, if you're hunting open terrain, you're going to hunt with your eyes. You're going to get on points where you can glass and kind of find turkeys and hunt with your eyes. It gets really, really challenging when you're hunting areas like I prefer, which is wooded settings, when you don't have a lot of fields, you don't have a lot of openings. And you got to hunt the turkeys in those high wind situations in areas that you would typically be hunting with your ears. And that's when you're going to start looking for these, like the downwind side of a big ridge system. Those turkeys are going to get on that downwind side that we found. They're going to hunker down in the hollows. They're going to still do turkey things. Turkeys are still going to gobble, and they're still going to do the same things they would do if it wasn't windy. You just got to put yourself in a position to be able to hear them. And you want to be downwind of the turkey because their gobble is going to travel farther downwind. You wouldn't believe what a difference that would make. But you also got to remember that they can't hear you as good. So typically I will call more frequently because to where that turkey may have been able to hear you from 200 yards on a normal day or 250 on a normal day, he's only going to be able to hear you at 150 yards on a windy day. So I'll increase the frequency that I'm going to call as I'm moving. And then I'm going to try to target those downwind sides of the ridge systems and the hollows, the lower areas. I expect turkeys to kind of spend more times in bottoms on that day if they're in a wooded setting. Then we can kind of move over to a rainy day. Rainy day here again, it's all going to depend on if you're in an open setting or if you're in a wooded setting. Turkeys are going to seek out open terrain if it's raining. I don't care which setting they're living in. If it's in a wooded setting, they're going to kind of target woods roads. I've seen them spend all day in old logging roads and, you know, anything that's going to give them that sight advantage. So I'll target those areas. I'll target hilltops that I know are open, that doesn't have a lot of mid-story so they can watch for predators. And also easily have that advantage of jumping off the top of a ridge and getting the wind beneath their wings and kind of escaping danger, because a wet turkey takes considerably more time to get off the ground than a dry turkey does. And they know that. So they're going to get to those areas where they can take a few bounces and jump off a, you know, a ridge, a mountainside, and get that wind beneath their wings. So I'll look at those areas. Of course, if you're hunting open terrain, it's more a glassing game again. And those turkeys know they're heavy. They're going to get in those big open expanses so that they can really use their eyes to see danger coming and avoid it, you know, with a little extra time. And the only other weather deal that I think is overlooked sometimes that we, you know, you kind of have to build some strategy around, that's extremely hot weather. That's when it gets, you know, upwards of 90 degrees, 100 degrees. These turkeys are walking around with a coat of feathers on, so they get hot. And targeting turkeys in the shade and knowing that turkeys are going to avoid open areas in direct sunlight when it's hot like that is another advantage that you can kind of capitalize on. You got to realize, like, when it gets, you know, 9:30, 10 o'clock in the day and that sun gets more overhead, those turkeys typically dip out of any open areas. So if you've got a turkey that's living around an open area, they want to bug, they want to be out in that open area to look for seeds, dry off. If it was, you know, a lot of times if you're dealing with hot weather, you're dealing with heavy dew, and those turkeys want to get dry as quick as possible. So they will hop out in those fields if the grass is short enough to not get their bellies wet. I've found that, you know, they avoid that water, they avoid that wet grass. So they're going to be where the grass is thinner or shorter. But when that sun gets overhead and gets hot, they're going to dip out and they're going to be in the shade. They're going to look for a bottom to seek out some relief. So that's another weather pattern that you can kind of keep in your pocket. Like turkeys, they have to deal with the heat just like you do. So just thinking about those types of areas that would be more comfortable for you are typically more comfortable for turkeys as well.
What do you do for like northern hunters that have those big extreme changes on the other end, where it goes from, you know, mid 50s one day to, you know, upper 20s, you know, overnight and real cold in the morning? I mean, do you see any impact to turkey activity on days like that?
I will say with certainty that I would rather start a day in the upper 20s than the upper 60s. I'd rather hunt turkeys with it cold. That being said, I despise hunting turkeys in the snow. I just don't like hunting turkeys in the snow. It impedes my movements. It's just loud. It's just crunchy. It's your feet are wet, you know, which I don't mind hunting with wet feet, but cold and wet feet is a different ball game. But that being said, I would rather it be in the upper 20s and I'd rather it be on the cold side than the hot side when I'm hunting. So I don't think that there's, you know, you can kind of target these, the slopes that are going to see the sunlight quicker, because I have seen turkeys roost on those sides of the slopes and target those sides of the slopes to take advantage of the sun and warming up. But here again, I think direct sunlight kind of interferes with their eyesight quite a bit. I don't think they can't see as well with the sun in their eyes, and they don't have hatbills or whatever to shade the sunlight, you know? So, I think they avoid those that direct sunlight quite a bit. And the only thing I'll say other than that is snow. I mean, I've hunted in snow quite a bit, not a ton. I avoid it like the plague. I try to stay away from it. But when you do encounter snowpack, you got to get in those evergreen trees that are going to hold the majority of that snow off the ground. Turkeys just live up under them when it comes to heavy snow, and target those areas. Either that or they're following livestock, elk, you know, they'll get behind a herd of that's got that. They're just trying to look to get through the snow. Snowpack's pretty tough on a turkey, but they're looking for those areas that's going to have less of it.
Just a real quick story. And then kind of the final question here. I was hunting in Tennessee this spring, and huge, just massive, public land. And I, kind of in my wanderings, I find this, I don't know, probably 8 to 10 acre little hilltop field that had been clear cut. It's just beautiful. And I mean, I am miles away from the nearest parking spot. And I'm like, I knew there was a lot of heavy rain the next day. I'm like, this is it. This is where it's going to come together. And I'm the next morning I get out, I take the, you know, the 5+ mile walk out to the spot. And it's, I mean, this is 3:30 in the morning, you know, and I see a freaking headlamp walking through the field. I mean, we came into the field almost at the exact same moment. And I was just like, damn, this is it. So, you know, naturally I'm going to walk, I'm going to go talk to this guy, because this guy obviously is, sees exactly what I'm here for. And we ended up talking for about a half an hour, had a great time, and just kind of went to separate ends and laughed about that we both found the same, because you couldn't see it on the map, because I mean it was just one of those, it was kind of, it was real small and narrow, but it was there, and unless you walked in on it, you didn't know it was there. And it was cool, but it was just frustrating for both of us. It's like, man, thought we found like a hidden gem, you know.
There are very few secrets in the age of satellite imagery and Onyx. There's very few secrets now.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So kind of the next, you know, segue into this question, you hunt a ton of private land. What do you do to combat like hunting pressure for people? Is it as easy as just, I'm going to work harder than the next guy, hardest worker in the room? You go 4 miles, I'm going to go 6. Is that kind of your movement?
I think you meant to say hunt a lot of public land. You said private land.
Oh, excuse me.
But then your description was all public. But anyway, a little bit of everything. I mean, there are no golden ticket responses to how do you hunt public land. I've always said I try to approach the land a little different than everybody else. I try to stay off of roadways, but sometimes you just got to stay on a roadway. There are no, you know, silver bullets here. But yeah, I try to typically approach the turkeys from a different angle. I try to give them something that they haven't heard before. That may mean me walking completely through an area to get to the back side of it and work it from the back forward. Approaching the area from the steep sides, the area that's going to be most difficult for people to approach it from. Approach it during a different time of day, approach it during the week rather than on the weekends. Just anything that's going to be a little different than what they've heard before. It could be a call choice. I think we've discovered over time that, you know, some calls aren't used as much by people. You know, a lot of the, you get a lot of people talking about having turkeys respond to like trumpets or wing bones. When they won't respond to anything else. And I think that has to do with what the turkey's been conditioned. We got to realize that turkeys don't have the ability to reason. So it's not like they're sitting on their roost and going, oh man, that's gravel popping. I'm not gobbling this morning because that guy in that Chevy's here. Like, they don't have the ability to do that. But what they do have the ability to do is become conditioned to negative experiences. So if every time they hear gravel popping, or every time they hear that 3-note owl hoot, who cooks for you, they get blown off the limb, or they get shot at a couple different times, or whatnot, they're going to condition themselves to like, hey, every time this happens, something negative happens, so I'm going to quit doing that. So what we got to do as hunters, if you want to be, you know, just give them something that they haven't been conditioned to not like, to avoid. That happens in everyday life for them. If they go to the same place and get chased by a coyote, they're going to quit going to that same place. Or if they have to go to that same place, they're going to be very cautious when they get there. So it's just, you know, life for them. They're getting hunted 365 days a year. So they're nervous, and that's why we love them. They're, you know, that's what's captivating by them, is something that's able to, you know, a bird that's getting hunted by everything, just kind of throws all caution to the wind for that couple months out of the year. And we get to enjoy that. And I think that's what causes us to be, you know, obsessed with them. But we got to remember that they're getting hunted every day of the year, so they condition themselves to stay alive. And we just got to kind of exploit that as hunters to figure out what they haven't heard or what they haven't seen.
So 60 seconds or less, give me the one piece of advice that you would give to a new turkey hunter.
Get out there. I mean, nothing kills more turkeys than time, and it's the only thing that you can't buy more of. So experience will always be the number one teacher. It'll be always be the number one tool in your bag. So get as much experience as you possibly can, and that only comes with devoting some time to the craft.
Dave, thank you, man. Thanks for your time. Where can people find you on social media and your website?
It's Penhody Project, kind of all the way around. So on YouTube, I think it says Dave Owens Penhody Project, but everywhere else is Penhody Project on Instagram, on Facebook, and penhodyproject.com is the email. I mean, is the website. So should be pretty easy to find. Same thing everywhere.
Good deal, Dave. Thank you so much, man.
You bet.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.